they might call a testimony. That's not a very common occurrence within our faith tradition, but really, if you think about it, you look in the Word of God, that's what all the early sermons were. Apostle Peter took it up and shared his testimony of how God had come into his life and worked with him, and Paul did the same thing. And we serve a God who is risen and living and still very active in our world. And if not, why do we pray? Why do we ask for his help? Why do we ask for his guidance and his blessing unless we believe that he's going to answer and be working with us? I have been living very much in a verse that comes from Jesus' feeding of the 5,000. And as Jesus was out there and the people followed him out into the wilderness, you think about that. He went out there to get away from the people, and they followed him out there into the middle of nowhere. They were so hungry for what he had, thirsty for the water that he had, the only thing that would quench their thirst. They went out into the wilderness. And as he looked at that crowd, he asked the disciples, "What are we going to do to feed all these?" But the verse right before that says he knew what he was going to do even before he asked that question. And so as we face obstacles that come up in our lives, there are going to be things that are going to happen to you maybe today or tomorrow or this week that are just going to surprise you. Like, I never saw that one coming. God already knew that it was coming and has a plan for how to get you through that. And it's up to us to be open to God's leading and to God's guidance. If you're sensitive, you can see God at work in your life. You can see him in the circumstances, that he is already there before us. I've been preaching for some 40-something years now. The last 23, I've been preaching at the Redlands Church of Christ. I've also been a hospice chaplain. I've worked as a fire department chaplain, currently with the city of Redlands. I've been doing fire chaplaincy for 26 years. And it just amazes me to see God at work in our community. And I show up and allow the other people to be able to see him. Sometimes you see him right then and there, answering prayer, doing something. Other times it's kind of like the footprint prayer and poem. You look back and you see that one set of footprints. Where were you? Oh, that's when I carried you. But I kind of like this verse, this thing. When you see one set of footprints, it's where I carried you, but that long groove is where I dragged you kicking and screaming. We've had a little bit of that in Redlands, and I'm going to be sharing that in the class as we talk about Redlands' story. Recently led the Redlands Church of Christ into a merger with Eastside Christian Church of Anaheim. And there were some that was kicking and screaming, and it's been an interesting journey. But I want to talk today about a question. It's a difficult question that I think all of us have dealt with. And it's the question that comes, why weren't our prayers answered? Now, I understand God always answers prayers. Sometimes it's no. Sometimes it's not now. Sometimes it's yes. But I think we understand where this question comes from. Why didn't I get the answer that I was praying for? My loved one was sick and they died. I was looking for a job. It didn't come. Where's the person that I'm supposed to marry? Been waiting so long for that. Why are my prayers not answered? Because we see examples of prayers being answered. Just this last week on Facebook, there were two cases where people said, oh, it was a miracle answer to prayer that this child is doing as well as the child is doing. It's God just answering prayers. But what if your prayer wasn't answered in a miraculous way? And this was a particularly difficult question because this question came to me on July 23rd, 1993, the day before my daughter died. She had been fighting cancer, bone cancer, for 2 years. We were in the last hours. We had just told her the night before she dragged it out of us that Yes, you're dying. And I was sitting with her in her room on that Friday morning. She looked at me and she says, Dad, why weren't our prayers answered? And I didn't have an answer for her. We had prayed. There had been African Christians that fasted in prayer for healing for her. But a healing was not coming. And I sat with her for about 15, 20 minutes just after that question in silence. And finally, Kristen says to me, well, it's okay. Whatever God's will is, it's okay. Wow. Yeah, that's the type of girl that Kristen was. Some people said that it was so sad that we didn't get to see Kristen grow up. And my response has been, no, we saw her grow up. You grow up real fast at age 10 when you have cancer. You face the things that she did. What we missed out on was her childhood. And we saw that faith in that statement, and we saw it lived out through the entire day as she had been resistant to people coming. At this point, she hadn't eaten for 2 weeks. That's a very common and natural thing we understand now for people that are dying. You just lose your appetite. You lose your thirst. We didn't know that. But she finally said, well, if people want to see me, let them come. And so all that day and all day the next day, people came, would visit with her. A lot of them left with teddy bears. And we're still hearing stories today, 26 years later, of interactions that people had with her that day and how she changed lives in those interactions throughout her illness. I want to share one little story that came. This is the three amigos, we called them. It's Kristen, Crystal, and Deanna. They had been together since preschool, even, all the way up through sixth grade now. As they got into sixth grade, it was middle school, and Deanna kind of fell into the wrong crowd at middle school. And Kristen was very worried about her. And we didn't hear this story until what would have been Kristen's senior year. And it was a dreary November night, I think it was a Thursday, that the phone call came in from Deanna. And Deanna called us to say, listen, I'm having to write a story about a life-changing event. I'm applying for Cal Lutheran. And I have to write a story about a life-changing event, and I'm writing about my last interaction with Kristen. Deanna had called and said, you hadn't had any interaction. This was while they were still in fifth grade. And she called just that last week and said, how's Chris doing? And I said, well, she's dying. She won't be here much longer. And Deanna came over, went into Kristen's room. And they were in there for quite a while. And when Deanna left, she left with a poster that had been on Kristen's wall. And the poster said, what's popular is not always right, and what's right is not always popular. And Deanna said that changed her life. She talked to her parents. I haven't told this story many times in public, but she told her parents that she needed to get out of the public school. They put her in a private school. They started going to church. They're all baptized, and now here she is, her senior year, and she's applying to go to Cal Lutheran, and she has since graduated and is just doing really great. But, you know, there are milestones in your grief journey that just become more difficult. And that senior year, that would have been Kristen's senior year, was a difficult time for us. And there on a gloomy November night, we get a phone call that lifted our spirits, that showed us that Kristen's life really mattered and still was mattering in people's lives. And we continue to hear these stories about her. And I share this just so you understand the kind of girl we were praying for healing. I can understand why God wouldn't answer my prayer. I can understand why, you know, he wouldn't do a miracle for me. But for a girl like this, somebody precious that's doing his work, that is changing lives, how do you reconcile that with a loving God? Why weren't our prayers answered? And that Saturday evening, Kristen called us into her room. People had been in and out all day, and now it's just the family, and she calls us into her room. And we walk in, and we didn't realize it was the beginning of the last hour, and Kristen looked at us and said, "I'm dying now. I'm dying now." No fear, just acceptance. This is recognition that the process had begun. I've been a hospice chaplain for a long time now, and there are often those recognition of what is happening that come to people. And of course we said, no, you know, and we gathered around and we watched her. She fell asleep, woke up a little bit later, and she was looking beyond the room. And we don't know what she saw. If I had known then what I know now, I would have said, "Tell me what you're seeing," because many times there's a connection between here and the other side in those last hours. Stephen in the Bible had one of those, where as he was being stoned, the heavens opened up and he saw his Lord. But whatever she saw brought her peace. As we came into her room, her little sister, 3 years younger, Brittany, fell on her and said, "Sissy, I don't want you to die." And Kristen hugged her and says, "Brittany, I'll always be in your heart. If you look for me, you'll find me. I'm going to be with God." Talk about faith. And we watched as her breathing grew more and more shallow until finally she takes one final breath and is gone. And at that point, her question really became my question. As I struggled to reconcile the death of a young, precious life with a God who loves us. And it was a struggle. I struggled with it for a few years. I was still preaching because that's all I knew how to do, but I struggled with this. I struggled with this. Until finally, God dealt with me in the same way that he dealt with Job. Because Job asked that question, and I'm not even going to begin to compare my suffering with Job's sufferings. But he struggled with that question. Why? Why is this? Why, if I'm favored, why, if I've been so obedient with you, why has all this happened? And what I want you to understand is that God did not give Job an answer to the why question. God doesn't answer the why questions. Sometimes it's really obvious. You know, somebody does something stupid and they end up with that. It's like, well, okay, the why is because you did this. You got drunk and you got in your car, and that's why. But like Job's friends, you know, Job's friends did really good until they started talking, trying to answer the why question. And so I want to encourage you, if you're with somebody who's suffering, don't try to answer the why question. Because sometimes even if you know, I mean, how would Job have felt if the why for all of his suffering, if he truly got the answer, was, well, you were doing so good that I started bragging to Satan, and he dared me, so I put you through all this just to show how good you were. How would Job respond to that? Really? Have an object lesson to Satan? The why question. What did God do with Job? God didn't answer Job's why question. Instead, he gave him a vision of who he was. You have those series of questions. God says, well, you have asked me some questions. Let me ask you some questions. How many stars are there? What are their names? Who goes and puts the water in the fountains of the deeps? Who keeps the cycle of the earth going? And Job is just in awe. He hadn't even thought about those questions before. And here he was with the one who was in charge of the entire universe. And Job's vision and true understanding of who God was enough for him to accept not getting an answer to the why question. My questioning through the death of my daughter and my struggle with the why question, I came to see who God is in a way that I never would have. And it became a paradigm shift in my life and in my faith and in my obedience to God. And I found my vision of who God was in two verses that I desperately needed to understand and that I think we in the churches of Christ desperately need to understand. And it's a common verse. It comes from a great passage in Romans chapter 8. And the first verse is, if God is for us, who can be against us? And as I look at that first verse, really? God is for us? Do you understand that? Have you come to understand that God is for you? That really wasn't my upbringing. That wasn't my understanding. My upbringing was that God was really against me, that God was looking for a way to some sin, some fault, some disobedience so that he could send me to hell, and that we had to get it perfect, or we're not going to be able to make it into heaven. I remember my grandmother, as she was facing death, and she said, "Pray for me, Steve. I hope I make it." And I said, "Granny, if anybody's going to get in heaven, you, I'm a preacher because of your prayers for me. You were faithful throughout my entire life as my mother was in and out of churches, and my dad really didn't become a Christian until my daughter was in cancer and I had that opportunity to baptize him one Christmas before Kristen died. 30-year Navy veteran, finally yielding himself to the will of God. If you think about that, that works kind of salvation, so much a part of our heritage, that causes so much of the division we have because we've got to get everything just perfectly right. Because we don't understand that God is for us. Is he really for us? The proof is in the next verse. He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also along with him graciously give us all things? You see, God, as a father, watched his son die. And don't gloss that over, okay? We know that, we've heard that, but spend some time camping in that. God, as a father, watched his son die. He could have stopped it. Do you guys sing that song? He could have called 10,000 angels to destroy this world and set him free, but no, he died alone for you and me. He could have stopped it, but he didn't, because he loves us so much. I watched my daughter die. She had bone cancer. Then what really took her, and the doctor said when it recurred that you need to hope that the lung disease takes her before the tumors in the spine get too bad, because bone cancer is so very painful. And what bone cancer does is when it metastasizes, it makes bone. And she had lung metastases, and so what eventually happened is that her lungs turned into bone. Watched as her breathing grew more and more shallow, and I couldn't stop it. We tried. Over $1 million in treatments. I would have traded places with her. That was my prayer. Take me. I would have chosen any one of you to die in her place. Because I don't love any of you enough to give my daughter in your place. I might die for you, do the heroic thing, but I'm not going to give my child to die for you. But God does. God does. And it was a paradigm shift for me to understand that God was not looking for a way to catch me doing wrong, to send me to hell. No, because I was destined for hell, and God gave his son to keep me out of it. And that's a total different way of looking at it. God is for us. How do we know that? Because he gave his son for us, and it cost him. It was not easy for him to watch his son die. Understand that. It wasn't easy for Jesus to go to the cross. He struggled there in the Garden of Gethsemane. Father, if there's any way, let this cup pass from me. And it says that he bled through the pores of his skin. Have you ever concentrated so hard on something that you thought your brain, your head was going to explode? Well, that's what happened to Jesus. He actually overpressurized the capillaries under the skin, and he began bleeding through the pores. He was so intent on that prayer because he knew what crucifixion was like. He had watched it. He'd seen it. And he knew he didn't deserve it. But it was the only way. And forgive me, but one of my pet peeves are our preachers that say that God turned his back on his son on the cross. I think that comes from Jesus crying out from Psalm 22, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Jesus felt forsaken. But it was very common in that day and age for a rabbi to quote the beginning verse of a psalm and for the rest of the congregation to supply the rest of that psalm. They had the Psalms memorized. If you read the rest of that psalm, it is a glorious declaration where Jesus says, I'm going to declare your name in the whole congregation. And that's what Jesus was doing on the cross, declaring the name of God, that God is love and God is forgiveness. And if you read Psalm 22 and verse 24, he has not despised or disdained the suffering of the afflicted one. He has not hidden his face from him, but has listened to his cry. And so the very psalm says, no, God didn't turn his back on his son. He watched his son die. Because if you think about this, Jesus, who is the perfect son, doing the express will of God on the cross, if God could turn his back on that, what's to say he's not going to turn his back on us when we sin? But God's not that father. Jesus said, no, God is the father that's watching for the son to come from far away. And when he sees him come, he runs and doesn't even give the son the time to get the apology out. Because why? God is for us. God is for us. And God watched his son die, and it wasn't easy. And you see his involvement at the crucifixion on that Good Friday. What did God do to show his angst, his pain, his anger at what was happening? What did he do? He was there. He darkened the sun. He shook the earth. He tore the curtain of the temple in two. As Jesus died and opened that way up, God says, here, let me open it. And he raised the dead. couldn't even wait for the judgment day to begin the resurrection process. So excited with what Jesus had done and the forgiveness that was now available, he started that resurrection on that day to say, here's a foretaste of the glory to come. He couldn't wait. Jesus died, and we were set free. And so the question that is before you today, and that I challenge you, do you understand that God is for you? Do we understand that? God is not the accuser. Who's the accuser? Satan, that's his name. God is the Redeemer. And it goes on in this verse, who will bring any charge against those whom God has chosen? It is God who justifies. Who is he that condemns? Christ Jesus, who died, more than that, who was raised to life, is at the right hand of God, is interceding for us. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Neither height, nor depth, nor anything else in all of creation will separate us from that love of God. And we need to grab hold of this. We need to use this. This is the good news that we are here to share with the world, that God is for you. He gave His Son to die for you, and there is forgiveness and renewal that is available. And I stand before you today, and I know who my Redeemer is. And I have an assurance of heaven. And it's not because I'm perfect. I am far from it. I've got 3 daughters left alive and 6 grandchildren that will tell you how imperfect I am. But I'm not going there because of who I am. I'm going there because Christ is interceding for me at the right hand of God. And that is the hope that should get us up every morning and take us through this life. Do we offer an invitation? Yes. Understand, God is for you. God's will is that you be saved. And the way you do that is through the imitation of Jesus' death and burial and resurrection. You come and confess Him, put Him on in baptism, and you can be raised, what? To walk in newness of life. You're saved to serve the community that you're in. If we can help you in that obedience, if you want to come home to this one, if you've misunderstood who God is, and you want to love the one who loves you, we stand ready to help you. And if you need to respond, you can come right now as we stand together and sing.